Welcome to Prosperity for God's People, brought to you by ChristianTraders.com, the Internet's fastest growing Christian investment community, created just for you, the Christian investor.
Everybody's happy.
Striving for excellence in Christian talk radio, excellence in the world financial markets, and most of all, excellence in your personal walk with God.
Broadcasting live
from the CFRN studios in beautiful downtown Phoenix, Arizona.
Good afternoon, friends. It is Tuesday afternoon, and of course, that means it's time for the Debbie Chianti Show. Debbie, the mic is yours.
Well, hi, Duane. Thank you. Today's guest is Dr. Patrick Byrne, and I know I'm really excited to have him here. He's the chairman of Overstock.com, and he has so many accomplishments. Hi, Patrick. I'm going to brag on you in a bit, but
no,
I thought
no,
you could say hi.
Hi. Don't brag on me or rag on
oh,
me.
Oh, I'd love to, just a little bit. I'll try not to make you blush. I was just impressed. I read online some of your accomplishments, and some of them really were surprising. Really interesting mix of things in your life.
It reads better than it played. I, as they say in the theater, it reads better than it played, I promise you.
Well, you know, I think that's one of the things that is wonderful is your communication skills are amazing. I read some speeches that you've given, and you know, it's amazing. Do you write your own speeches?
Oh yeah. Usually as I'm walking up to the podium. Actually, I ad-lib them usually.
Oh, that's great. They're wonderful. They're heartfelt. You have a degree in philosophy and Asian studies, plus a doctorate in philosophy.
Yeah. Yes. Don't laugh, but
I think that shows through, though, in a lot of the things that you say. I thought it was fascinating. You tried to be a professional boxer.
Yes, I thought I was the Great White Dope for a while.
I got
beat pretty badly at one point. Decided there were easier things to do with my life.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I can't even imagine. I don't even like to watch boxing. I don't like to see people get hit, and least of all me. Yeah, that's amazing. And then you have a black belt in Taekwondo?
Yes, that's right. Tell me about yourself. Why is this? Tell me about yourself and your show.
Okay, well, my show is, I always liked radio, and going back about 30 years, I took radio in college, and I definitely didn't have a voice for radio, very high-pitched, but now that I've gotten older, it's come down a couple of octaves, and I can do it now. And when Dwayne went over to Uganda 2 years ago, he asked me to take over his radio show while he was gone. He had a program that was live in Phoenix for, I think, 2 hours a week, or it might have even been shorter than that. And I was terrified, but I agreed to do it because I knew he really needed to go to Uganda. And it turned out I loved it. And
great.
Since then, I've just been dabbling here and there. And
well, when one has to go to Uganda, one has to go.
This is true. He has an orphanage there
that
he started with his wife. And, oh, it's fabulous. Well, that's another thing I noticed in your bio is that you're involved with some kind of world trade group for Overstock. I forget the name of it, but it sounds like employing third world or developing nations artisans.
It's called WorldStock. It's a tab within Overstock that sells really beautiful handcrafted products from around the world, and the idea is really just to to see if we can employ people and still get very nice products into the hands of American consumers if they're tired of mass manufactured stuff. And so there's some really nice, you know, crafts made from everything from Native Americans to folks in Latin America and Africa and the Far East.
I think that's wonderful, and that's really my passion, is helping developing nations, the poor in developing nations around the world. I work with World Vision very closely.
Oh, that's a terrific organization. That's a great
organization. I love them. Thank you. And
I remember
that's right up their alley.
I remember Dwayne said that he. I remember that Dwayne had built an orphanage in Uganda. That's wonderful.
Oh yeah, that's one of my passions, is really doing something for the AIDS orphans in Africa. That country, that continent, has just been devastated by AIDS, and the number of orphans is staggering. It's hard to wrap your brain around what that means. You know, 10 million children orphaned. It's almost impossible.
It's wiping out. It's obviously messing up the demographics terribly. And then what happens to those? I mean, I know in South Africa there's just this terrible problem of the number of kids who have lost both parents, and they don't really have the traditional village setting to rely on them, and it's a terrible situation. We at one point, WorldStock is actually, or I should say at times, WorldStock has actually tried to source products from, there are different groups, there used to be in Cambodia a group of women with AIDS who made, I don't know if it was quilts or it was something like that, and we were buying all that they could produce. Unfortunately, I think that organization shut down. But there's another one that, well, I know we're doing some similar things in Africa, but I think it's fairly hit or miss. And just you hope that by paying $50 a quilt or something, that they can support themselves, and that we could sell it for $100 or $99 or something. Or in that case, we'd probably sell it for more like $80 or $75. But I applaud Dwayne's efforts over there.
Right. I think that's great. And, I think any time someone reaches out to help somebody like that, it's a good thing. It's never wasted. I don't think kindness is ever wasted. And
I'm not sure I have quite the faith in the perfect balance of world karma that you do, but I'll take your word for it for now.
Well, I understand where you're coming from, because I guess I really totally understand that. There really is the backlash, no good deed goes unpunished, and that could almost bring us up to speed on you taking on the subject of naked shorting and market reform, because that was pretty bold. But I also just wanted to make a quick plug. I know that there are so many people that love Overstock.com. And, you know,
thank you.
So that's the company you're the CEO of.
That's
the rumor.
Thank you very much. I thank you very much. It's a great joy in my life when I actually run into people who just rave. And we seem to have these raving fans out there. I love it.
Definitely. And you have fans that have just... are so enthusiastic, and I wanted to read you something I saw on a message board when people heard you were coming on the program. It just seemed so nice. I know a lot of people on the message boards are very concerned. They wrote in your name to the Market Watch CEO of the Year contest, and it was supposed to end on November 13th, and it looks like they changed the rules and made it so that only who they pick could be nominated.
Oh,
so they changed
kidding.
The rules after the fact, and everybody's crying foul because we know who actually got the nomination.
I don't know. I know that people told me that they. I saw emails where people say, "I'm telling all my friends about your stuff." It would have been kind of funny had I got both the best CEO and the worst CEO, but at least that wouldn't. But anyway, I know I was not aware that they had changed the rules.
They changed the rules, and people are flipping out over it. So they are writing, you know, they're starting a letter campaign because that's just, they're crying no fair. And I want to read you this one comment somebody wrote about you because it's beautiful. This is from Howie, and he's very, He's working very hard on market reform and against naked shorting. He's a 22-year-old soldier. I think he's either just got out of the military or he might even still be in the military. But he's been a little activist, and I just think it's wonderful to see somebody that, at his age, working on this. I'm really impressed. And how did he word this? I had it opened up, and I lost my screen, so I have to go back.
First of all, you're finding that. I'll just say, too, if this is true and people really are taking the time to try to nominate me, I thank folks, but please don't put yourself to any trouble or start a letter-writing campaign. And if I ever showed up on Herb Greenberg's page as the best CEO on any site that would employ Herb Greenberg, I should say, if I showed up on any site that would employ Herb Greenberg as the best and as the chosen best CEO, I'd probably shoot myself. So nobody should. I thank anybody for any efforts they've expended, but please don't put yourself out. That's very kind.
Well, that's sweet. It's funny. Okay, this is from Howie. I've come to really respect Patrick, not only because of his tactful mannerism when educating and confronting people who oftentimes prefer to take shots below the belt without reasoning, but because he is a true patriot in this fight. He has a conscience, even in the face of incredible opposition. He took a stand for something he knows is right, that is commendable and deserving of our support.
Well, thank you, Howie. Thank you very much. That's very kind. I hope we can get back to that, because Howie has raised some interesting points, but that's very nice to hear.
Well, great. So what is new at Overstock.com, and what is new in the market reform area?
Well, Overstock.com, I can say we have a new site design has come live. We have personalization. If you come and shop at Overstock and you spend any time on our site, you'll see personalized product recommendations that are really very good. We have a new site design, a new search layout that people are, from the numbers I see, are finding very useful. We also were voted last week. I can't believe this. I'm thrilled. But as you probably know, about the time that I got very public in this market reform fight, we had basically built Overstock on a shoestring, and the shoestring broke last September. It at least began fraying last September. But anyway, we did a dramatic sort of rush changeover to a non-shoestring, to a big $70 million worth of technology, and we had to rush it, and it caused a lot of problems for us. And we really came off the rails operationally as a company. We've been growing 100% a year, and this year we've basically been flat and just saying we're going to fix all these different things. And it's cost us a lot of money, and some of my critics, there are many, say, you shouldn't have been focusing on this other thing, you should have been focusing on that. And, you know, what I'm so thrilled about is that we decided at the beginning of the year, everything, we just had to fix all the things that we have. And just to be able to give the finest customer, I mean, I know this sounds like a pitch, but anyway, last week the National Retail Federation and American Express came out with a survey that I didn't even know about, that they had surveyed, I think, 8,000 Americans at random and said, what company gives you, what retailer gives you the best customer satisfaction or something. And we ranked number 4. We're the fourth most mentioned company, which I can't believe, because the others up there are L.L. Bean, Nordstrom, and Amazon. And I grew up in New England, so I think I was just raised to think of L.L. Bean as the most perfectly executing company in a retailer in the country. And even I got to give props to Amazon. Amazon's great, and Amazon's actually great in basically all respects now. Nordstrom, great, and I can't believe that we're now named in that company. It's in that's to me the most valuable, to have built a brand with the name recognition we have and with that level of support in the American public is unbelievable to me. So I mean, I've screwed up, and it's when I screw up, I try to say I screwed up and I take the blame and so forth, and I'm not taking the credit for this. This is purely my colleagues. Jason Lindsay, Stormy Simon, Steve Tron, and others, and Tad Martin. But it fills me with a lot of pride. They've built a brand with the fourth highest, mention from customers in America is giving.
In a way, it's amazing because it's such a simple concept in some ways, and it's so good. My favorite type of shopping is bargains. I love bargains. And, that's your store is bargains with quality that you can really get a feel for before you push the buy button. Because, there's a few different types of products that I know exactly what I want. And the descriptions, I really like high thread count sheets and down comforters. I live in New England, Massachusetts. It's cold. We keep our heat down to about 58 at night because we live in a Victorian, and if we turned it up higher, it would be so hot upstairs you wouldn't be able to sleep.
Well, we got them. We got the down comforters. We got the sheets. We really have we've focused on that area, and we've developed a beautiful selection and quality, and that works well for us.
You're not kidding. My favorite thing I think I ever bought, I bought from Overstock, and you're not carrying them now. I don't even know if they're making them. They're called Comforoos, and they're these little down throws that are really thick that fold into a pocket and become a pillow.
Ha! Huh. Well, I didn't even know about it, but...
They're great. I keep a couple in my car, and, if you stay at a hotel and they don't have a down comforter, you can bring your own.
Well, I'll look into see why we don't have them anymore. Maybe we got a special, a canceled order somewhere sometime, but I'll find out why we don't carry them anymore.
Sure, they might not even be making them anymore, but I really like them. Great gift idea for Christmas. And I noticed you also have estate jewelry. That's kind of new, that whole part of Overstock.
Yes. Well, our jewelry in general has really taken leaps forward this year. The quality is exceptional. And I was actually just meeting with some fellas here today, some good guys out of New York who provide our some of our watches. And, we really have it's just kind of a shame that all that you read in from the New York meters, of course, we know what they want to focus on.
Right.
There's exceptional watch deals, diamond deals, all kinds of watches. And, we're not trying to have the 10,000 SKUs that some, other watch type have. We're trying to have the 1,000 that are absolutely the best deals. And our quality, we go way up into Cartier, Tag Heuer, Movado, Omegas. We have exceptional. So it's nice when people come in. One time I was on I was walking through an airport actually in Miami, and a fellow I was walking with. I'll tell that story later. I'm sorry. I don't need to. It's just nice when I run into people who sort of find out that I work at Overstock, and they just start saying, this guy said, "Do you realize how many people's lives you're making better now that we, and just because we're able to afford more than we used to?" So he didn't quite put it that way, but it's really a nice feeling and a nice part of the company. We got started during all the scandals of 6-7 years ago and the collapse of Enron and things like that. And nobody believes that, nobody believes that a company that would just try to do this. But our real mission was to say, let's try something different. Let's just be fanatics about giving the best deal we can to a customer, going out, sourcing products as cheaply as we can, passing it on to the consumer, and wrapping it up in great customer satisfaction. And then let's see what happens. Maybe the world isn't a good place where you can't act. And we're in an industry where there's a lot of, it's a pretty bare knuckles industry, the closeout industry. Well, let's try to be the guys who act ethically and upright, and let's see if the world recognizes it. And until this naked shorting thing came along, everybody on both sides, both the consumers and the manufacturers, loved what we were doing. Now, it's all getting, it's a shame, but it's all getting wrapped up with this naked, it's a shame that the naked shorting thing is what is now getting the most publicity, but, your soldier, Howie, put it perfectly. I think of this as you know, people are constantly pressuring me to back out of the fight and to shut up about the fight. And, you know, some of their arguments don't fall on deaf ears. But and what I really want to say is, are you kidding me? Don't you think, do you really think I want to do this? Do you really think that I would like to, that I wouldn't want to be, get, you know, leaving this to somebody else? But if you get this fight, it's like finding out that somebody is poisoning the town reservoir with cyanide. You don't just get to say, well, you know, I did my part. I called the police. They're going to handle it, whatever. And, oh, well, the police didn't come, but, you know, I did my part. You don't get to say that. If you see some old lady getting beaten by thugs, you have, you know, you do your part. You call the police. But if they don't come, you have to get involved. And there's no amount of butt-kicking that you can take that justifies saying, okay, well, I did my best. Go ahead and go back to beating her up. You just, you know, they can knife you, they can shoot you, they can blow you up or something, but you don't get to back out of a fight like this. And I know if you get this fight, you know what I'm talking about.
I totally get the fight. And, you know, I think it's even worse than you're describing, because in the example of a little old lady getting mugged, perfect example, it's people that are depending on retirement, stocks for their retirement, are getting mugged. And we call the policeman, which is the SEC, and instead of just not coming, which would be bad enough, they actually come and help the robbers.
Yeah,
and help the muggers.
Yeah, they do. They say, hey, you're being too aggressive in how you're trying to stop them. Oh, we may arrest you for, we may bust you for, you know, assault. It's like, did you ever read the writer Franz Kafka? He was, from 100 years ago. He wrote stories that were like that, where all the rules of the situation are so bizarre that you can't keep, it's just surreal. And I have to
say, I would love to. I haven't, but I'll try it.
Yeah, well, this is surreal. It's a house of mirrors. It's unbelievable to me. Now, I don't mean to be, I know I've been very critical of the SEC. I got to be clear. There are folks in the SEC who I think are very good guys. And I think there are folks at the top, and I think there are folks in the branch offices. The institution, meaning the middle ranks and the brass, not the political appointees, but the brass and the upper management and the middle management, I think have slipped a stitch. But people should be clear, there are some very concerned folks, I think, at the grassroots level of the SEC. That's my belief, but anyway.
And just like I believe in the good deeds, no, I'm kidding. I do think that you're right on that. You know, it would be impossible for me to think that every single person in the SEC is incompetent or worse. And I believe there are, of course, some good people that really truly care about enforcement. And, you know, being with the SEC once upon a time carried something good about it. You know, I can't even imagine working for an agency, wanting to do the right thing, and having to carry the stench of the biggest scandal that really doesn't get reported very often.
You know, most government employees don't want to go. I think government employees deserve our respect as a group, of course, because nobody goes into the office saying, I want to do a bad job today. And just for having made, any one of those SEC guys can walk out and double his salary probably, so you've got to give them respect for that. But it's well, anyway, I think we're on the same page. So, but all that said, yeah, I think the SEC has failed and is failing in its mission. And I hate to say, I'm like you, 10 years ago when you heard that the SEC was looking into somebody, it was a big deal. It was like hearing somebody had, you know, a bad disease or something. It was a big deal. Now that people understand how much of what it does is really because some powerful hedge funds are politically connected and they can get investigations started, it doesn't even carry the same guilt or culpability, culpable associations and things like that. It's, to me at this point, I mean, I don't want to challenge them, but there's Jim Cramer on television writing bull on an SEC subpoena and throwing it on the floor. You know, that's, I was amazed, and I thought that the well, the fact that nothing's happened is the only answer we need. It's I think that there's a serious question whether it's going to survive in its current form, because I do think that we're getting momentum. We're clearly getting momentum. I can tell from the phone calls I get. In fact, I see now Cramer and others sort of trying to prophylactically spin to blunt what they already know is coming, and they do know it's coming.
That's great, and I want to talk about that a little bit. And I have a question for you, and I know that there's people that are listening that are going to call in with questions too. In 2000, it was in October, CNN, just this last October, October 2006, CNN said that there were over 1,000 hedge funds failed in 2005. And to my knowledge, I never heard boo about that during 2005. And that's about 12% or more of all the hedge funds that were in existence at that time, the largest source of revenues to the brokers and the most number of trades, and that wasn't mentioned by the financial media. I find that stunning.
Well, that's interesting. I'm not sure. You say CNN said that, right? I'd have to see that and see who said it and see if it was somebody who knew what they were talking about. Sounds very high to me. Last I've heard, there's between 8,000 and 10,000 hedge funds now operating at $1.75 trillion, is the last numbers I've heard. Did 1,000 fail? I really don't believe 1,000 failed. It's possible that 1,000... decided that, you know, it's a $1.5 trillion or $2 trillion earning 4% as an industry. It's a lousy investment. All this money is flooded in. The arbitrage that people used to be able to pick up, the seams in the market, have largely been closed up. So it's a couple $1 trillion earning 4%. So have some people decided to get out of the game? If you told me that 1,000 did, I would say that still sounds way too high. I'd have to really look at the source to say 1,000 failed.
Yeah.
But some big guys have failed. And Amerant, the $6 billion fund recently.
Right, yeah, recent. And Revco, which I think, I don't know what month that was, but that was 2006 when it came out, right?
No, October 2005. And you touched on the investment banking industry. You make a good point. The investment banking industry, Wall Street, the real good businesses there are gone. You can't take Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs is a hedge fund. It's two-thirds of Goldman Sachs is a hedge fund. One-third is an investment bank. So what it really is, it's a hedge fund with an investment banking brass plate screwed to the front. And so of the one-third that is gotten from investment banking and not proprietary trading or being a hedge fund, of that, you know, the businesses of charging people 10 or 20 cents to trade a share of stock are way gone. That's all been reduced for the big players. They pay half a cent now. So Goldman isn't making any serious money from trading, you know, people's stock. The investment banking business in terms of doing M&A, that's still there, and IPOs are still there, but those are relatively small. It looks like of that 33, so they make $100, 67 of them are from being a hedge fund, 33 are from being an investment bank. Those $33, it looks like about $25 of the 33 from the investment banking side come from being a prime broker. Well, prime brokerage is stock lending. It's a nice name for it's the stock lending business. So what that really means is it could be the case that 75% of the money being made on Wall Street today is really being made from something having to do with the stock lending business. Now, that may be, I ran a whole bunch of estimates together, but it's not out of the question that the real money being made from the Wall Street investment banking world is, you know, might be 30%, might be 20, might be 50, might be 75, is actually being made from the stock lending business. And as you know, the stock lending business is the real nexus of all these different issues we're concerned with market reform.
Wow. There are so many questions backed up for you here, because I have a few people online, besides people that are going to call in pretty soon. One of the questions is, with all the shorted companies now requesting no-bo lists, does he see a market-wide monetary settlement to victims of naked shorting?
That's a good question. Well, I've had something suggested to me in three different corners of Wall Street in the last 10 months, and it was suggested in a way that made me, it's a far out suggestion that made me think that the fact that I had suggested it in three different corners told me that it is the scuttlebutt, it is something being discussed somewhere. And that suggestion was, well, even if we turn out to be right, the naked, anti-naked shorting folks, turn out to be right and this gets exposed, the government isn't going to let there just be great big squeezes and bang, and $1 trillion have to be paid back, and in the process banks collapse and things like that. Or maybe it's not $1 trillion, maybe it's $30 billion, but they're not going to let the banks collapse. So what they would do is step in and impose a political settlement. And that political settlement would be something like, okay, these list of stocks, okay, that were shorted down, this was shorted from $17 to 20 cents, we're going to let everybody cover it, you know, but it's not going to squeeze up past 40 cents or a dollar or some regulated limit. Well, I just can't, I laughed at that because how can the government possibly say, both you were right, that money was stolen, and to say that, the government essentially has to say the company now has to sell enough shares to cover at such and such a price. Well, the government isn't in the business of setting stock prices. However, the fact that it's such a far-out suggestion, and I've heard it from three different respectable people on Wall Street basically saying, you know, Patrick, one of them actually said, even if you turn out to be right, this is what's going to happen. That tells me that it's actually been discussed. And there is something called I don't know how the government could do that. Don't know how it has the authority to do anything like that. But so that's kind of a long way of saying I don't see how a political settlement. Well, if there were a political settlement, one thing that might make it palatable if the whole system got exposed so it couldn't happen again. You know, but if it turns out that Americans have had $100 billion, a trillion dollars, whatever, drained out of the system, out of our savings, and nobody knows, I would imagine that's got to be the kind of thing that you cannot half expose. You got to expose the whole thing. Then the problem is, if you expose the whole thing, does that make the whole financial system collapse and the dollar collapse? 50, yeah. These are the kinds of things I worry about. I sure hope they don't, although I think the dollar's probably overpriced anyway. But I think that there's, our government has painted itself into a corner is what I really think. There's got to be people who are getting this and saying this is the financial horror show of all time, but all the options they have to get themselves out of it just look unpalatable.
Well, yes, it really is a mess, and I don't see how they're going to mop it up, although they have had years to work on it. It's just, and hopefully they've been doing more than what we see on the surface. Well, we had Old Pro come in, and I know he's going to have a question, but I do have another question from the scroll that I feel like I need to ask, too, before we get to Old Pro's question. Hi, Old Pro.
Hi, Debbie.
Hello.
And the question that people in the scroll are asking is, Patrick, would you consider running for Congress? Because people want to vote for you, Senator Congress, if you have huge support.
I that's very kind. It's actually the nicest part, probably the second nicest part of this job after knowing that we're saving people money, is that, I mean, people are now writing about me as some kind of folk hero or something. And literally that's the word that somebody I saw used in a recent blog. And that's really nice, but it's really nice coming after this. But I'll tell people that I recently, well, earlier this year, it actually happened to be one of those three folks I was talking about. I visited with a very well-known guy on Wall Street, and he's a very good guy. He didn't mean to be unkind by saying this. But he said to me, Patrick, you know, some years, and he's a guy I've known casually for some time, and a very respectable guy. And he said, a few years ago, Patrick, you were the golden boy of Wall Street. Now you have become the most despised man I've ever known in my career. You couldn't be more hated if you had killed somebody and were in prison. So that is what And he actually didn't, he's not a bad guy, he's a good guy, and he didn't mean
right.
to be. But so it's, and I've known that's true, and I knew that was going to happen when I came public with what I did. So having had my keister kicked so hard all this time, it's nice that I am suddenly getting this, you know, not from New York, but I am getting this kind of folk hero stuff. That's a nice compensation. I guess I would much rather have the folks in Iowa or Texas or Wyoming like me, and those in the financial district hate me, than vice versa.
Hey, Patrick.
Right, it's the right side to be hated by, and they have a campaign slogan for you, which is your last name, Burn. Burn now or burn later, B-U-R-N.
Okay.
Patrick,
take it away, old pro.
Go ahead, sir.
Patrick, please remember there's a lot more of us than there are of them.
Yeah, I'm afraid they got some deeper pockets and they own more newspapers than we do. But
yes,
that's...
sir. I agree with you. But we're going to win this in the end.
I hope so. I believe so. It's actually, I'm increasingly confident. But, you know, the confidence of winning this, I also feel some trepidation about what follows after we win this.
What, Patrick?
Well, I used to worry, oh my gosh, are we ever going to win this? Now I'm thinking, we are actually going to win this, but what happens when we win?
Yes.
And that scares me too.
Well, I'm sure you'll find somebody in your cabinet to appoint to fix it.
I have really generous. Go ahead.
Four quick questions for you.
Go ahead, sir.
How do we support you?
For your letters are nice, shop Overstock and get your friends to shop mm-hmm. Overstock. In fact, I'm going to throw something out here. If you, anyone who writes me today, and today only, at the email address patrickoffer@overstock.com, we will give a special $29, well, it's a Club O program. It's normally $29, but it gives you $1 shipping and 5% discounts. So just write patrickoffer@overstock.com. But no, seriously, if you can, I hate to be out there with a, you know, begging folks, but if you want to support me, shop Overstock and get 10 neighbors to shop Overstock and we'll be fine.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I've been trying to get people to do that, and I think the fact that you say it, it pulls a lot of weight, and I know I've signed up and a lot of my friends have signed up, so we're going to keep doing that.
Thank you.
Talk briefly about the we were at the conference in L.A. Can uh-huh. you talk about the proxy vote issue?
I'd love to. In fact, that's the... If you really want to get down to bedrock, to something nobody can debate, it's this: this is a horror show from the proxy issue, and it works like this. If there's naked, if there's naked shorting, then a company has issued 100 shares, but shorting itself will create, somebody borrows shares out of your account and they get sold to somebody else. All you get left behind is a share entitlement. You don't know that. You think you still have a share. You just have a share entitlement, and the right to vote that share actually goes with, the share. So then it goes from one, got another. Well, multiply that by naked shorting, and you now have companies out there who, for every legitimate share, there may be, well, nobody knows how many people there are out there who think they get to vote. So there was an April Bloomberg magazine, which is a very well-respected financial magazine, an article by a guy named Drummond. And if you Google Drummond, Bloomberg, the corporate voting hoax, or corporate voting charade, a heck of an article. It's an expose that I just can't believe. It's like Bloomberg magazine writing an article that aliens have landed in or walking among us. He has people on the record from the back offices of Wall Street, which are called the security transfer agents. He has these people saying it's positively criminal what's going on. We regularly receive 2 to 3 times as many votes as there are shares. And what we do is we just throw out the extra votes until we get the right number. What that means is that corporate decisions are being made not by shareholders, but by some kids in the back office, or they're being made by some arbitrageurs who have figured out how to game the system and who to pay. They did a study last year, 341 New York Stock Exchange companies, all 341 had overvotes. Drummond documents 400 cases from last year where a corporate decision got made by a narrower margin than the number of excess votes, which means what's really ironic about that is the scandals of 5 or 6 years ago tried to be addressed by Sarbanes-Oxley, the MCI, WorldCom, Enron stuff. Sarbanes-Oxley was supposed to fix it because it makes directors much more responsible, and yet that whole system relies on shareholder voting. And if shareholder voting is a hoax, or a charade, as Bloomberg says, that means that the whole system is built on quicksand. Now, everything I just said is undeniable. Anybody who looks into it and, you know, reads these articles, like Drummond's, reads about the New York Stock Exchange study, so it's a massive problem. It's just, that's like to find out that corporate voting in America, issues like should HP buy Compaq are getting decided by some backroom guys striking deals rather than by the shareholders, means our whole system of corporate, it's the death of corporate governance.
Absolutely.
Right.
That's so well said. My other question is, you said at one time that it won't be the SEC that unroots all of this, that it'll be guys with guns and badges. Do you still believe that?
Yes, I do, and I try to stay away from that because I don't mean to say I have any special knowledge there.
Yes.
And in fact, I don't claim any special knowledge there. But yeah, ultimately, this is way above their weight class. They can't fight in this weight class. They can fight with a Martha Stewart over a $60,000 insider trading thing or something. They can't take on 50 powerful hedge funds. There are people in the federal government who can, and there are people in the state governments who can. But it's out of the SEC's weight class, and I don't think that they have the desire to anyway. And I do think that there will be. Well, I also have some hope for the media. After all, I think that we're going to see some surprises in the media, and the media. To me, the bigger issues implicated here are. Crooks are always going to be crooks, and it's civilization's job to stop the crooks. Look at the institutions that failed us. Well, the Wall Street regulator didn't regulate Wall Street. That's no big surprise. But you know who else failed us? It's been the criminal prosecution, the law enforcement, not regulators, and it's been our so-called free press. I think it's been. You know, the real shame that's going to come out of this, I think, is going to land on the business press, because what this has revealed is that there's a small hedge fund beat of a couple dozen reporters, if that, who are the ones who really cover this world, and they've been so co-opted by the people they're covering, and of course everybody has their theories about how the co-opting occurs, but to me, that's what the real question to ask is, how did our institutions fail us so badly, and then how do we have to fix them? So what do you think, old pro?
Well, I agree. You know, I agree with everything that you've always said, and I just want you to know that there is a tremendous amount of support out here for you, and it's growing all the time. So please don't give up the fight. I know a lot of times it'd be very easy for you to say, you know what, I tried, like you said earlier, and I'm done with it because I've got a company to run. Any person that puts his company behind this issue and puts himself out on a limb deserves support from each and every person in America. And I just can't thank you enough, Patrick.
I agree.
That's very kind. That's very generous.
It's also very true.
Well, you can see, though, how our shareholders could have a legitimate beef, although I don't hear from many of them saying, don't fight this, but certainly the bad guys are out there saying, Burns should just focus on running his company. Maybe I'm not making him too comfortable. But it really, it's a tough moral dilemma. I could always hide behind an argument. I think it's a good argument that, wait a second, once I found out that my company was being manipulated and I don't have a lot of faith in that our proxy voting worked very well and things like that, I have a fiduciary duty to our shareholders. And I could say that, and it's true, but I have to say where this is corny. I mean, I hope this doesn't sound too corny. I can't imagine being an American and not doing this. If you get what's going on here. Now, I know that somebody, Herb Greenberg, stood up in front of a SABU conference, which is, SABU is the Society for American Business Editors and Writers, and said, oh, Patrick Byrne says he's doing this on behalf of America, not about overstock, and I'm told that everybody laughed. And to me, it's odd. Maybe it just tells us that we live in a time, and I don't think I'm anything special by any means, because I'm a CEO or whatever, that people are in our society are so cynical that they think that no CEO would ever do anything out of patriotism or something like that. And yet all the time, the people I talk to, what we're talking about is look at these kids, well, in Iraq, and look at these men and women in Iraq. Look at what they're out there defending. And look, I mean, what would they think if they really knew how this system was being gamed and what it is they're defending? It's, you can't sleep at night if you get it.
And are those guys at Wall Street laughing at them, too, behind their backs? I mean,
They are through their actions.
When do you think somebody's going to break ranks and join with you, another CEO or somebody on Wall Street get behind you?
Well, it's so funny. It has taken longer than I thought because I know that I've become so radioactive. And it's funny because when I've been in Wall Street and even in the last 6 months, I know this sounds like something out of a movie. Literally, I'm in some fancy Midtown office building seeing somebody, and when I leave, somebody hops on the elevator with me and rides at a floor and says, Mr. Byrne, I can't be seen with you, but I just want to tell you, keep doing what you're doing. You know, you don't know me. I just want to tell you, keep doing what you're doing. Don't give up this fight. You're absolutely right. I see this going on, but I can't be seen with you. Goodbye. And they get off. And literally, that's probably happened 3 or 4 times to me in the last 2 years.
Isn't that amazing?
So there are people there who get it, and they're not all bad. Nobody wakes up. I have a cousin who explained it to me really well one time. He said that, I have a cousin who's a 24-year broker dealer, and he said everybody sort of has to make their own peace. And Wall Street's a pretty bare knuckle place, and you have to make your own decision about where your ethical line is going to be. You can't really be Mr. Goody Two Shoes, but hopefully you draw the line you draw your own line well on this side of the law. But what seems to have happened in the last generation, and I was raised in and out of this world, and I remember and sort of remember being taught things like that, that what seems to have happened, I think, in the last 10 or 15 years is people are just rushing headlong over the line. There is no internal line anymore. It's simply how much can you get away with and how little the fines are if you get caught, and only 1 in 10,000 get caught anyway. And there are, in the current crop, there are fewer and fewer people with that internal line. And you can see, when you meet people on Wall Street, you can tell in a couple minutes with them whether they are from the old school or they're from the new school. And I think the old school may just be dying out.
And that's a sad commentary too, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. I can't tell you how. I've had a knot in my stomach for about 2 years since I got what was going on to this country.
Well, yeah. Debbie, I sure thank you for allowing my voice. And Dr. Byrne, like I said, we're behind you. Run for office. We want you to be the president of this great land, my friend.
Well, that's very generous. And we'll all have that presidential ball would be the most fun in a long time.
Amen to that.
Thank you.
Keep up the fight, Doctor.
Call me Patrick, please.
Okay, Patrick.
Thank you. All this doctor stuff is stuff they made up to try to make me look full of myself. I don't call myself doctor.
I don't know. Did you do the work?
Oh, no. I got the PhD, but I don't walk around calling myself doctor.
Oh, well, you know what? I think I understand that because it is a little pretentious, I suppose. But see, it's okay for us to call you doctor. It's not okay for you to say you're doctor.
Just that kind of a down-home guy, that's all. Thanks, Debbie, and thanks, Patrick.
Bye-bye, sir.
Thank you,
Bye.
Old pro. I have a question here while we're waiting for somebody else to call in, and that is that your slide presentation was on the CMKX task force,
really?
There are 40,000 U.S. shareholders as far as we know, and you're our hero.
Oh, that's very kind. On the site that came from, businessjive.com, I know it's being propagated elsewhere, the last I heard they had about 300,000 downloads of that. It's become kind of a I've reduced it to just over an hour, and it's become kind of the standard reference I'm proud of, and it's kind of funny use of the new media. It's, you know,
it is. It's great. I think it's great, and I think that that is your communication gift. It is wonderful. Now, do you do any writing? Like, do you write any songs or journal or, I guess, articles you do write?
I do. Well, I write. I used to write poetry, mostly for myself or for one lady or another in my life, stretching back years. I wrote mostly, odd as it may seem, because I seem to be out there in the world too much, I'm actually basically a high-functioning shut-in, and that I don't do, in my perfect equilibrium, I'd be a shut-in, and I don't really like to get out there, but, you know, you do when you have to. So I do write. Now most of it seems to be memos, but even there, in my letters to shareholders, I try to show a little bit of flair. But no, I love writing, and in fact, if I had some spare time, I'd probably write something about this someday.
Right, I'm writing a book about naked shorting. Kind of, I'm writing about my CMKX experience, calling it 2 years since Vegas, and I'm posting it online, a chapter at a time.
Great.
On my I have a website that's related to World Vision, so people can come and learn about World Vision, too.
Did I meet you, Debbie, in the NASA conference in D.C.?
No, but I called in to MN1 last week when you were on that program, and
that
I talked about being at the DTC rally in New York City with the naked shorts, little shorts with the plastic fanny.
Yep, that was a great story.
Yeah, and it offended Shorty very much. His sensibilities, apparently. You know.
Well, they're very selective, as I told you. Very selective sensibilities. We have Herb is out there outraged that he thinks he got pretext and his cell phone bills stolen. We have, it's absolutely clear that the Wall Street Journal reporter, a guy named Jesse Eisinger, did that. I met him once, and he had the cell phone records and bank account statements of Bob O'Brien, and he was sort of very proudly reading me things from them, and that was a little much even for the Wall Street Journal to tolerate, and they actually, when that got reported, they shut him down, but an hour later Carol Ramone showed up with the same information. So these guys,
that's interesting.
Yeah, they're very selective in their outrage.
I have another question for you from another board, and they are a Canadian shareholder in CMKX, and they said that they tried to place an order and they want to buy from Overstock.com. Are there any plans to expand into Canada, because they were told you don't ship to Canada?
We don't right now, and there are some oddities about shipping into Canada. The biggest problem, first of all, is the reverse logistics. You know, about 6% of our products get returned, which is amazingly low, but you know, people try on a pair of shoes and they keep one, don't care. So you don't want to ship something to Canada and then have a pair of tried on shoes coming back. So you got to figure out the reverse logistics. And then there's also a law in Canada that says you can't sell books to Canadians from across the border. So that's why Amazon actually went and they did some things. The short answer is we want to sell in Canada. I think it's probably 6 months to a year before we get around to figuring out how to solve those problems.
Great. Good answer. And it is interesting. I know I just went to ship a present to Canada last year, and it was, you know, interesting. It was books and material like that, and it seemed like it was a little involved.
Yes.
Yeah. I think I was going to order and have the company ship it and they had to have it shipped here and then box it up and send it there. I think that's how that ended up.
I
remember it was a little odd.
Was that us?
Yeah.
Were you ordering from us?
No, it was another company, and I had a ton of, you don't sell what I was, you were selling it. It was another discount company.
No, don't mention them, don't mention
them. Good bargains. Well, yeah, I won't, and you don't sell what they sell, and I doubt you ever will, so no competition there.
Okay.
I know people are going to want to take advantage of your offer, the Patrick offer at Overstock.com, and
yep.
That's for your, do you call it Club O, or what is that called?
It's called Club O, and it gives you $1 shipping and 5% discounts year-round. So just write Patrick offer at Overstock.com, and we'll make sure those funnel right into customer service and they get set up with it. It's a $29 value, but I'm doing this on for Naked Shorting people because I want to thank them for their support. And
awesome. Well, thank you so much. And I have a few more questions for you. What do you see for the end game here with all this naked shorting and market corruption? Like, do you see an end?
Well, you know, I don't see an end to corruption. I think corruption is a part of the human condition. I think that what's happened for years is the people who were doing this could laugh it off and shrug it off. They've got to be thinking, this time it's different. This is serious as a heart attack. And it's like we're in a game of chicken, and either they're going to swerve or we're going to have a massive collision. And
right.
And I think that what they should have realized some time ago, I think 6 months ago, is it has gotten out of my capacity, or it's getting close to out of my capacity to swerve. So they've either got to, what I've really been expecting is at
New
some
York
point,
Joe here.
Hey, is somebody to reach out and say, why don't we settle this in a way that doesn't you know, create a collision? And but they haven't. But I think that they're probably sitting there wondering to the extent that they've gotten that this is a really serious problem, and this time they're not, you know, they can have all the Roddy Boyd, Herb Greenberg, Bethany McLean poo-pooing of this that they want. It isn't going away, and it's not going to go away like that. So they either we're going to have a collision, or they're going to say, let's work out a deal. And, you know, I'd rather work out a deal I'd rather that we work out it. Some people I know are purists and they're writing me, don't ever compromise with these people. But the country needs to work out a deal rather than just see some sort of systemic collapse. But I do, you know, I think that there's a 1% chance of that, but a 1% chance is too big, and people ought to be concerned about it.
Right.
Go ahead. Well, I'd see a New York Joe, did I hear?
Yes. Hi, New York Joe. Go ahead.
Hi, Debbie. Hi, Patrick. How you doing?
Hello, sir. How are you?
Well, I'm doing okay, thanks. I just wanted to say, first off, thanks very much to the both of you for doing what you've done on our behalf. I know that it's a very time and labor-intensive fight. There's no question about that. There's so much that goes into it that people don't realize. It can be all-consuming because we're fighting a very, very real enemy.
Yep.
And I am very proud of the work that you've done. Patrick, I read up about you. I didn't know a lot of the things that you were into and that you had done and the battles that you had fought in the past. And I'd like to commend you, I mean that, because you have fought the good fight and you continue to do so. And you're an example for many of us to emulate. And I just wanted to thank you for what you do.
You know, that's very generous of you, Joe. It's so funny. I know that there's folks, there have to be some folks somewhere in the world who are just steaming hearing because they're that folks are seeing that, and that was overly generous, but that are they've tried so hard to just completely make me the worst guy, depict me in the most unflattering light that they could, that I assume, and I actually hear, that it gets some people pretty ticked off. What my theory was, not that it was completely calculated, but I thought that I knew that these guys were just going to sit here and spit on me and spit on me and spit on me, but I thought if I just stand in there,
yes,
eventually honest people are going to say, whoa, there's something hinky going on.
Exactly.
And it took a little bit longer. It took about a year longer than I thought it would, and it wasn't too fun.
No.
But it's so nice to hear. I get so many letters and comments and even calls from people that I don't know if it's really just 1% and 99% still believe the garbage in the New York Post or from Herb Greenberg, but I can tell you that, you know, 99% of the emails I get are saying nice things. So it's really nice to hear that, Jeff.
Well, it's heartfelt. There's no question about that. And I know that many, if not most, or all of us who are listening right now feel the same way. I would urge people to, first of all, I would like to tell people that my personal opinion is that we shouldn't fall for anybody that comes in and starts trying to, you know, be round up the troops against you know, government or against the company or whatever at this particular time in our case with the CMKX shareholders. However,
hand to hand,
I would believe that we should stand behind a man of such character, such as Kevin West. I think you and him have very much in common, and I mean that. I think that you guys are upstanding individuals, and I think that we ought to look forward to our leaders and say, let's give them our support. Let's give them the time that we need. We're all very, very tired of waiting. We're all extremely tired of waiting, but you know what? It's not done yet, and it's not going to be done until it's done. So we need to stand behind the people who have been put in a position of responsibility, and we need to give them our support.
Well, that's very kind of you, and I want to emphasize, I'm not trying to be a leader of anything. I'm just was trying to share some information, and you know, I'd love it if somebody else, you know, were the leader of this. But that's very nice thoughts. I don't know Mr. West myself, but
I'd like for you to meet him at some point in time. Sure. I think you two have a lot in common.
Have him call me.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I want to just break in here for a second before hand-to-hand. I know, Patrick, I had told you the show was from 3 to 4. We would love to have you stay later if you're able to.
I have about an extra 20 minutes, if that's enough.
Awesome. That would be perfect. And I just want to say, you know, you mentioned just now that you didn't want to be a leader. And you know nature abhors a vacuum, right?
Well, it's funny. What I really don't want is, and I said this to a reporter recently, because there are reporters who are, and I mean journalists, not reporters, real journalists, who are totally getting this. And I think it's just going to be a rush to see who gets the Pulitzer, who breaks the things, the big story, who really gets the enormity of this first. I swear to God, I don't want any medals. I don't care about any recognition. It's the nicest thing I get is when I get letters from soldiers, and I think that for some reason this is circulating in the military. I get a lot of comments from soldiers about this, and I love that, but I don't want any, and I mean, of all of the, no offense, Joe, but of all the recommendations I get, that's the stuff that really gets to me. But all I really care about is getting, I don't care if I never get mentioned again. I just want the guys with the badges and guns to solve it.
Absolutely. And you know what? I would end on this note and saying there's so many people that believe in you and in your mission and in Kevin and what he's doing and others that I consider to be unsung heroes that are really trying to do the right thing for their fellow man. And all we need is to get this resolved to make an absolutely tremendous difference in the lives of so many people. There's a good group of shareholders here. Probably 95% of them are real good people. And I've spoken personally with many of them, and I know what their plans are. They can't do it without the money, though. We need to at least get even on this and get ahead a bit so that we can move our personal plans forward to help our fellow man.
Yeah, well, it's when you think of, I think of it, the world can survive with a few less discount down comforters or or even diamonds or whatever. But if you really understand what's going on here, and the enormity of the crime is that there's biotech and high-tech research that is just being disrupted. Our capital markets, you know, if I had it to do again, I wouldn't even raise money in the United States. I'd be trading over in the Singapore Exchange or Hong Kong or somewhere, India, where there's a rule of law and not in New York.
And T plus one or T period would be a good way to go.
Yeah, look at the bond market. The bond market is basically T plus 10 minutes, I think. You know, there's the only reason, this is like Dick Grasso, God bless him, but the guy who ran the New York Times, New York Stock Exchange.
Stock Exchange, right.
You know, he protected the specialist industry, and he protected it for about 5 years longer than it should have existed. The technology was there to wipe all this stuff out, and he by standing in front of that tide and saying, you know, we got to protect the institution, what he really did was he bought an extra 4 or 5 years for this industry that this position that really technology could have replaced a long time ago. So similarly, all this, the opposition we meet is basically a bunch. I think that they're very cynical. I believe they understand they're involved in something very bad. They understand the effects on society, and they're just saying we're going to do it anyway. And if we can, by fighting Byrne and fighting these guys and calling them names, we can eke an extra year or two out of it. Well, that's an extra you know, however many tens of billions or
dollars. Exactly. Very good point. Well, listen, keep fighting the good fight, Patrick. Many of us are behind you, and we respect you, and we thank you for doing what you're doing.
Shop Overstock.
Okay, I will.
You know it.
All right.
Thank you. Hand to Hand came in.
Hand to Hand.
I wanted to say good afternoon to everyone. Mr. Burns, it's very nice to hear your voice again. And Joe, hope you and the 343 are doing well, sir. And it's nice to hear you again today, Debbie. Mr. Burns, I had a quick question for you. Were you aware as of today, according to Bloomberg.com, that an old friend of ours, SAC Capital, Mr. Stephen Cohen, has recently got rid of his nuclear interest in Florida Power and Light and is now going into Alcoa and Phelps Dodge? And on that note, I'm wondering if, in fact, we shareholders were able to organize some type of a rally to bring attention to this issue again, who should I contact in order to try and schedule an appearance or some type of a statement from yourself to add support to the rallies to hopefully, you know, get the word out to your audience as well?
Well, you can always just reach me at patrick@overstock.com. When you say a rally, do you mean like a meeting of a group of people?
No, sir. I mean a process, if you will. We had three last year, which Debbie and Token Joe that was just here took part in. We rallied outside the DTCC in New York City, the SEC in Washington, and the NASDAQ at Times Square. We got together a group of shareholders. We got all our permits and funding from, you know, the city that was needed, and we met and we put on a rally. Gary Weiss, who is a reporter for Business Week, was there. He has written a book that mentioned the rallies, and I believe he called us the Baloney Brigade in the book. So apparently he has a swayed view as far as what we stood for that day, but that's okay.
Well,
the word got out.
Gary Weiss is an interesting case, and I don't have all the time to tell this story now. But where Gary Weiss has been exposed on a site called antisocialmedia.net, antisocialmedia.net, and there's a guy who basically, as far as I can tell, played a game of cyber cat and mouse with Gary for 6 months and has documented, you know, well, you can read the argument itself, but with all kinds of screenshots, how Gary is many different names on Yahoo message boards and even within Wikipedia. And right now within Wikipedia there has been quite a debate. The Gary Weiss page, Gary Weiss turned out to have been the guy, according to these things in antisocial media, a great site, antisocialmedia.net. And it turns out there's another fight going on similar in some ways to our fight, and it's documented on antisocialmedia.net and also a site called Wikipedia Review, wikipediareview.com. And what Gary Weiss did was he wrote the pages on naked shorting is a myth at Wikipedia and Patrick Burns a crook and Overstock sucks and all that. That's all Gary Weiss. Of course, you know, from the best, this guy's put together some pretty compelling evidence that's all Gary Weiss. And so he's on the Yahoo message boards for up to 27 hours at a time. Well, that doesn't sound like a hobby to me. But so Gary Weiss is a very interesting guy. He's serving a very interesting master. He's serving some very interesting masters.
Well, Gary Weiss was like a modern-day Columbo when he appeared at the rally. It appeared to me that he just stumbled out of his apartment. He had a bagel in one hand, a cup of coffee in the other, and was digging through his pockets with like a little 2-inch, you know, golf scorekeeping pencil that you would have. And that's how he took his notes down. And it was kind of amusing because we talked for quite a while, and I really didn't take him serious because he didn't present a professional appearance, so I really didn't think, you know, it was anyone other than one of New York's finest walking the streets. But turns out he, in fact, did write a book, and we did get included in it.
I haven't actually read that, but I know about the Baloney Brigade.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it was kind of, but with regards to a rally, is that something you feel would help the cause at this point as far as getting the word out publicly?
To tell you the truth, maybe minimally, yes, but the beautiful thing about technology is we're all getting together and we're rallying right now. It's through technology.
Social networks.
And, you know, maybe it's a possibility that this stuff has been going on for decades and maybe more than decades, but the reason no one could ever expose it before because we couldn't all find each other. Well, now through the internet, we're finding each other and we are rallying and we're sharing information and putting pieces of this story together. It's possible that this stuff has really been going on at some level for many decades, and the thing that's different now is that we can find each other, we can and compare notes and compare knowledge. So while I think that I think that the rally just gives more ammunition, to be honest, at this point. But
what would your recommendation be for the everyday shareholder that we can reach? What exactly do you feel has the most bang for the buck, if you will? Is it writing a letter to the Senate? Is it, you know, contacting just their local state representative? Or what would you suggest?
I would say writing your state regulators. The state regulators, I have to say, are better than the federal guys, much better. The state regulators are, I mean, if you look at every recent scandal, from the late trading mutual fund stuff to that it's been developed at the state level. And what happens is the SEC turns a blind eye to it for as long as they can until some state regulator or attorney general jumps on it. And only when they get it going, the SEC gets embarrassed, and then they step in and they throw some elbows and pretend to be interested. That's not so the state regulators are good. And I'll tell you about another site called congressmerge.com. Congressmerge.com is a site that makes it very easy to write your Congress and Congress people and senators. And I've spent some time in D.C. on and off, and I can tell you they pay a lot more of attention to that. You know, the senator doesn't actually sit down and read all 1,000 emails, but they get tallies, and they know that, hey, this week 115 people wrote us about this naked shorting thing in my office alone. There's one senator. So the more people can go to congressmerge.com, and it makes it very easy. You can write a message, pick a state, pick a representative, and you can get a letter to your congress people in 10 seconds, 20 seconds, and it makes it very easy, and they do read it. And I've been impressed. There's some good men and women in Washington who do want to do something about this, and these letters do matter. And you know what else matters? And I'm amazed at this. We all saw Richard Shelby on TV saying, no one's ever told me anything about this. Well, there's at O'Brien's site, The Sanity Check, there's a wall of shame where people have sent hundreds of letters to Shelby, and then they post them at The Sanity Check, and just so he could never say at any point, I've never been told any of this, and actually that's what he is coming out and saying now. But setting Shelby aside, congressmerge.com is a great way, and write your local, your state regulator. That's a great way too.
Thank you very much for that.
Take care.
Excellent. Wow. Well, that's all good information. When you were talking about Gary Weiss being exposed, I had to laugh because he included me in his book, you know, The Plastic Fanny Naked Shorting.
Well,
so he's been exposed.
Well, he's been exposed with some very funny. He's living in he's out there in Brooklyn, and there's a woman living near him named Slim Virgin.
Right, I just looked that up at antisocialmedia.net, and I was scanning it. It was really interesting.
There's a woman named, her actual name's Linda Mack, and Linda Mack is very high up within the Wikipedia hierarchy. And Linda Mack is a very strange character from my own past. And it turns out that this person, very strange character, I told some of this story there at antisocialmedia.net in a little letter to them and a Wikipedia review. I posted something. Very strange character. She was actually at one point working for ABC and was fired from ABC as being, it was a big issue in England in about 1990-91, and Pierre Salinger came out and said, we believe this woman was a plant from the British intelligence services within ABC. So it was quite an issue if the British intelligence had planted a mole within a news organization. And Gary Weiss turns out to have his own very strange relationships with Gary Weiss started his career reporting on the influence, the movement of the mafia into Wall Street. And I understand he did some good work, but Gary Weiss took kind of a radical turn in the late 90s and He did quite a 180, and he seems to have worked hard to deflect attention from certain people. And there's a certain consistent theme in his work since then of trying to deflect attention from certain people.
Well, I think a lot we're going to find a lot of the reporters and authors we're reading are in fact somehow on the payroll or being compensated somehow to be writing the stories they are, much like you've, you know, alluded to with Sat Capital and all of the companies involved in your fight. I still am personally convinced, and I'll take responsibility for making the statement, that Lee Webb of Stockwatch is apparently on someone's payroll just from the way he spins a very one-sided view on issues. I mean, there's no way a legitimate journalist, in my opinion, could totally one-side any issue. There has to be objectivity to every issue, regardless of good, bad, or indifferent. I just hope that these people are exposed in the end and their journalistic days, other than maybe writing poetry, you know, jailhouse poetry, is over.
Well, you know, I think that there's a spectrum, and I think that there's a spectrum. And at one end of the spectrum, you have journalists who are quite smart. Well, there are some who are smart enough that they could actually be working as analysts themselves. And step below them, you have, well, people who are like that, but they probably wait for the phone to ring from their buddy at a hedge fund who's going to, you know, give them a story. And then a step below that, you have folks who are going out to the Hamptons together and playing poker together and stuff like that. And maybe there's a rung below that where you have people who are taking preloaded credit cards and cash cards and running. And we don't know. It's ultimately going to take subpoenas and stuff to find that out. Certainly some people act. I'd say Herb Greenberg has written with such a callous indifference on companies like NFI, for example, such callous indifference to the truth that you just think, could this guy really be this bad? And even when errors have been pointed out to him, he's completely indifferent. That he's made massive mathematical or arithmetical errors with NFI, and he just, when I've seen emails where people point this out, and he just says, "Oh, you're welcome to interpret the truth any way you want." And it's like somebody wrote that 2 + 2 = 3, and you say, "No, it's 4," and they say, "No, you can interpret it any way you want."
Well, Mr. Burns, if I may ask one quick question about this, with regards to the gentleman that was at the L.A. meeting, the reporter from the Wall Street Journal, was it John Emsweiler? I'm not sure. Can you give us a follow-up on anything with him?
Well, Emsweiler, the jury may be out. I've heard from somebody whom I trust that Emsweiler is a... I've heard a story about him I can't believe regarding the Al-Jindi matter, but I won't repeat it because I actually do believe it. The source was about as credible as you can get. But on the other hand, Emsweiler, I don't think he's been as tied up. I don't associate him as having been as tied up in this stuff as others. On the other hand, people say, no, he's just as bad as Eisinger or Carol Ramone. He's evidently working on a major story. My guess is he's going to come out. I think that these folks know that there's some bad stuff coming their way, and it's too late now to hold it back. So what they're going to do is try to blunt it. And they're going to blunt. Jim Cramer's out there, and sort of prophylactically, the other night he was saying, the reason the street.com has survived and prospered is because we always stayed independent of the powerful groups on Wall Street. Well, that's the biggest joke in the world. The guy's a shill. Guy's a shill for, you know, some hedge fund buddies. That's all he is. They're suddenly like spinning this party line that seems like a prophylactic. Now, I'm going to be curious with Emsweiler. Emsweiler, he may come out with a story. I have no reason at this point to doubt him, other than one thing. He did try. I can kind of tell. These journalists call me sometimes, and sometimes not so often. And they try to do, you can tell when somebody's basically a liar or into a power play or trying, you know that they're just going to do a hatchet job. And many of them let you know. Carol Ramone wants you to know when she talks to you that she'll say something to me she literally, this was one conversation with her. She's like, so why are you saying that David Rocker is naked shorting? And I said, well, I'm not saying David Rocker is naked shorting. I don't know that. I know that he's shorting. He said he's shorting, and I know somebody's naked shorting, but I don't know if it's David Rocker. And she says, okay, so you're convinced that David Rocker is naked shorting your stock. Next question. I mean, she does, literally, that's a verbatim. So she does that. Carol, Ramon, they want you to know what they're doing. Emma Schwaller had a conversation like that with me once, which surprised me because I'd had in other conversations, and I think he'd even written something, and it was fair. He wasn't trying to do anything. But I did have one conversation where he was pushing very hard and didn't sound like he was really looking for the answer. He sounded like he was trying to, you know, trap a quote. It may have been the stuff about my dad. Karen Richardson is one I'd put in that first category of a crooked. I'll tell you a story. Karen Richardson called. I'll save that for the book. Anyway.
Yeah. Right. We'll look for that book for sure.
I'll tell the story quickly. Anyway, Karen Richardson actually called my doctors and tried to get my medical records and lied. She actually said that she was working with me and that I'd given her permission. It was all a lie. In fact, I specifically said no. And I actually have a letter from the hospital confirming all this. And it turns out that's a felony. It turns out it's a felony.
Woohoo! Go get her. Go get her.
it's you know, what people say.
You're too nice.
Life is long. Life is long.
Well, that's true.
Well, I'm told that's a felony. The pretexting to try to get someone's medical records is I'm told a felony, but we'll.
Well, I'm sure you'll get a dozen emails from lawyers explaining it.
It's unreal.
I have emails. When I get these letters from lawyers saying, "Hey, if you don't retract this, I frame them and put them on my wall." I really do.
Sell copies online. We'll buy them.
Okay.
You could carry that at Overstock.com.
I should. I may start putting. I'm waiting for the one. Anyway, let's move on. I don't want to dwell on that. I got about 10 more minutes, if that's okay.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah. They'll kick us off in about 9. But
okay.
Great.
You want me to get off now?
No, not at all. We want to hear everything you have to say. I know everybody in the audience is still listening, and let's see if they have any more questions. Do you have any more questions? Hand to hand?
No, you know what? I'll go ahead and sign off. I just want to say God bless everyone and ACA. We're playing for your soul, dude, because you need it. And with that, God bless you all. Good luck, Mr. Burns. Thank you for everything you've done. Debbie, thank you as always, dear.
Thank you, Hand.
Okay, thank you, Hand. And yeah. I'm reading questions while I was listening there. It said, here's a question for you. Did you find it unusual that Ron Insana left CNBC after he opened the naked shorting can of worms?
Well, can you hear me? Yeah, okay.
Oh, yes.
I think Ron, what I found most unusual is the day he left, it was when all this stuff was blowing up between, you know, Herb, Jim Cramer. They talk about it. They did a special show talking about their subpoenas. I think for 2 weeks, CNBC just ran their advertisements for themselves was, here's this awful guy, Patrick Byrne, and if you come on CNBC, you can learn more about this awful guy, Patrick Byrne. So I think then they had, Ron did something very strange about 1 o'clock, I think it was a Tuesday afternoon or Wednesday afternoon, he does this unannounced interview with Herb and Jim. He sits there, lets them tell their story. Of course, their story is journalists are above the law. Journalists can't reveal their sources, which is ridiculous because nobody is saying that nobody's wondering who their sources are. Everybody knows they're open about who their sources are. People are wondering, did you collude with hedge funds and investors to release stories at certain times? So, but they're, who's that woman from the New York Times? I'm blocking on her name. The one who was with Pro Chalabi, that woman.
I can't think of it.
Liz, I'm blocking on her name. But yeah, she went to Judy Miller. And she ended up going to jail because she couldn't reveal her sources. These guys are trying to pretend they're Judy Miller, and this is a First Amendment
brother.
Thing. It has nothing to do with that. And I actually happen to have been told that they're not by anyone in the federal government, but that their lawyers are not even... Their lawyers told somebody I know that, no, we're actually not making this a first... Our argument to the feds against enforcing subpoenas is not a First Amendment argument. They can't pull... But publicly, what they're doing is they're going out and saying, oh, this is, you know, we're journalists or... So, I'm sorry. Why was I going down that path? Why was I sort of got off track there. I keep on wanting to go in different directions.
Well, that's okay. You can take it wherever you want to bring it.
Well, just I've probably said enough about Jim and Herb, but they are out there. Ron and Sana. Ron and Sana then has them on, and does an interview where he lets them tell their side of the story. They go off the air, and about 30 minutes later, Ron was out of a job, and I assume Ron quit. But his email, he basically sent an email to someone I know saying, I'm no longer with CNBC. This email box will be dead at 5 p.m. Best of luck. Something like
wow.
that.
Wow. That's unreal.
And then he went dark for many, many months. So wow. that's, I would say I find that whole thing rather strange, but I think Ron and Son is a good man who was interested in exposing this. I think he was a man who was willing to work within the confines of his medium, and I think it was his, well, I don't know. I don't want to speak for Insana, but I think that if he had stayed at CNBC, this story, I like to think, would have made some more progress. But, you know, there's a great story in a book called Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance about a priest who is, or a minister of some kind, who's giving sermons, and the town's people love him, but he starts giving some sermons that make some people uncomfortable. And when the guys with the money come to him and say, hey, we think you should stay away from this topic or that topic, he's got to remember who he serves. Does he, well, he, you know, his boss really isn't the guys who are making the donations every Sunday, it's somebody else. And the obligations of a journalist in that situation are to tell the truth, and if you get fired, you get fired. I don't mean to say Ron got fired. In fact, my understanding is that he quit, but it was a sad day for CNBC. I think CNBC will also cease as a news organization. It'll be completely discredited, because we have situations where, you know, Jim Cramer's on the air lying. It's been pointed out to CNBC that Jim Cramer is lying about certain things. And, for example, he claims never to have heard of Gradient Camelback. There's people from Gradient Camelback who say, we've had dozens of conversations and emails with Becky Quick. Becky Quick knows about this. And in those conversations, she was saying, Jim Cramer loves this, he loves that, he loves the latest work on such and such a company. He says, send me the latest. So there's all this documentation that at least Becky Quick was, and this goes back a year and a half, 2 years. So now CNBC knows that, and all CNBC has to do is check their email servers. They won't check their email servers. When it comes out, as I think it will someday in court, that was all true and Jim Cramer was lying, then, you know, that basically means CNBC took part in a cover-up. And I think that's the case. I think CNBC has taken part in a cover-up.
Wow, I think you're right. And, you know, it's funny, I used to be a fan of Jim Cramer until I understood what was going on in the market. And, oh my goodness, now it's unreal. I can't even stand the sound of his voice. To me, he looks like a madman. How opinions change once you understand what's going on.
All you have to do is read his book. If you want to be convinced that Jim Cramer is a crook, just read his book, that first book, Confessions of a Wall Street Addict or whatever. I mean, he describes in there doing things that, as I'm reading it, I'm thinking, holy cow, this guy is describing something that's illegal, I think. And he describes it blithely. And so is he absolutely a criminal? No, I guess he's only a criminal when a jury finds him a criminal, but he describes doing things in that book that I think of as being illegal. So, but, you know.
Or at least unethical or immoral from your perspective as somebody with a conscience.
They're way beyond unethical.
Yeah.
They're way beyond where I understand the law is. Now, I could be wrong on that, but he describes, you know, manipulating stocks and doing. And then if you read Nick Meyer's book, which Nick Meyer was this guy who worked for him, Nick Meyer reveals things that Jim Cramer did that are absolutely, you know, if true, they're illegal. Now, ultimately, I guess no one's a crook or a criminal. No, I can say somebody's a crook, even if they haven't been found. He's a crooked guy by temperament, by behavior. He's only a criminal when a jury actually convicts him.
Okay, that sounds reasonable. Good definitions there. I know we're going to be getting kicked off in a minute. I wanted to say thank you so much for what you do at Overstock.com, what you're doing for market reform. I know many, many people appreciate it. I want to make mention of your offer. It's Patrick Offer at Overstock.com, and that's for Club O. It's a $29 value, free, if you write to Patrick Offer at Overstock.com.
And today
then,
only.
Do your today only, yep.
Today only.
So be quick about it, and do your Christmas shopping there. They have the best gifts. And I'll let you take it away until we get beeped.
Okay, well, just shop at Overstock. And if you can get 10 friends to shop at Overstock, it'll make my day. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're not kidding. That'll be great. And you know what? If you get your friends to shop at Overstock, the quality of your Christmas gifts will go up.
And the volume. You'll be able to buy twice as much.
There you go. I like that. Yeah, I love bargains. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, I like to go to Overstock. It's really fun to browse through there and definitely want to click the buy button. That's an important part.
Debbie, I'll let you sign off. So nice talking to you.
So nice to talk with you, and thanks a million. I hope we can do it again. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Debbie, thank you so much. Another wonderful show, and we'll see you on Friday morning for the Mark and Debbie show.
Oh, well, it'll be Mark and Joe in the
Wayne
show this week. I'll be visiting my mom.
Exactly.
Right.
We're going to have Clint Curtis with us. For those of you who don't know who Clint Curtis is, go to ClintCurtis.com. You'll find out, and once you find out, you'll be here Friday morning. We'll see you then.
Okay. Bye-bye. God bless. Thanks.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Pastor Dwayne Reeves, and his guests. This information should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed security broker or financial planner before making any investment decisions.